Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the On Track podcast. Do you know what to look for when you're sourcing a new printed circuit board supplier? What certification should they have? Can you get past the window dressing with the online marketing, whether it's online or in person? Today's guest, Steve Williams, who's the president of The Right Approach Consulting, has literally been in thousands of shops around the world. He's going to give you the tips you need to know to find a new board supplier that's reliable and is going to get the job done. So lean and enjoy. I'll see you on the other side. Welcome to Altium's On Track podcast, where we talk to leaders about PCB design, tackling subjects ranging from schematic capture all the way to the manufacturing floor. I'm your host, Judy Warner. Please listen in every week and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all your favorite podcast apps. And be sure to check out the show notes at altium.com/podcast, where you can find great resources and multiple ways to connect with us on social media. Wait a minute. Before we get started, we've got some exciting news. Altium has some amazing limited-time spring specials that we just have to let you know about. Right now, you can save up to 45% when you upgrade to Altium Designer 19 or add additional licenses. The offer expires May 22nd, 2019, so don't wait. Check out the Altium website at altium.com today to learn more. And now, let's jump right into another great conversation on the On Track podcast. Steve, welcome, my friend. It's good to see you. Thank you for joining us on the podcast today. Looking forward to chatting with you.
Great to see you, Judy. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, I see you're with our mutual friends, Prototron Circus, today up in, they're in Washington, right, Steve?
Yep, Redmond, Washington.
Redmond. I haven't had a trip up there yet, but I'm very fond of the folks at Prototron, and I know they build great boards, and they're quite good at RF and microwave, among other things. So
they do. Come up and see us.
I will. In fact, I was just telling Ben, our video manager, we should come up and get some footage, because we're always wanting to show designers the inside of a board shop. So if you can talk Dave Ryder into letting us drag a camera in there, we'd gladly come up and visit.
They'd love that. They've got people coming in all the time from design shops that have never seen a board shop before. So I think that'd be perfect.
Right? Okay. All right. Done. Date made.
Good.
Well, let's dive in. Can you please give our listeners a brief overview? I know you have a very rich and long history in the industry. So can you tell us a bit about your professional background, and then tell us about your consulting firm, which is The Right Approach Consulting?
Sure. That was a really nice way of saying I'm really old.
I know. Well, I try not to say that about myself, but buddy, I'm right there with you.
Sure.
Wait, what year did you start in the industry?
1976.
Okay, you win. I started in 84, I think. So,
you're
old and I'm not. That's for today.
That's true. So,
no.
I spent 22 years in senior management of the board fabrication industry. So, I made boards for 22 years. Then I went to work for my largest customer, a very large global contract manufacturer, and spent the next 15 years evaluating companies all over the world for quality and technology and best practices. And that kind of showed me that there's a lot of companies out there that needed some help. So 6 years ago, I started The Right Approach Consulting, and I help companies with their quality systems, with best practices, with just improving their performance.
So when you were working for that company, so you were going out and doing quality audits on behalf of that CM?
Yeah, my team went out, my team went out and would evaluate companies for potential partnership with Plexus to support us globally, worldwide. So my group was in charge of all the custom things, boards, sheet metal, plastic injection molding, anything that was a build to print item.
Right. Well, this is one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, Steve, is because designers and engineers in our audience, some of them never get into a board shop. Some of them have the privilege to go out and do those painful audits. And I know from working in the board industry, things aren't always sort of under the covers what it looks like, as you call the window dressing. So I wanted to sort of wisen up our audience and tell some telltale signs of what to look for. and a good board manufacturer. And of course, with all those years of experience, I'm sure you know what to look for. So,
sure, that's a great topic.
Okay, so
it's amazing how many OEMs and contract manufacturers and design people have never been in the board shop, and they qualify board shops based on a quote or a recommendation, and have never stepped foot in there, and that can lead to trouble.
Why does that happen? Because it, you know, the world's changed in our lifetime, you and I, and a physical audit and visiting a board shop used to be a non-negotiable.
Right, right.
Why has that changed?
I think resources have changed. You know, you've got to have a staff to do that. You've got to have people that know what they're looking for. And as OEMs started to outsource to contract manufacturers, they lost that talent and they lost that capability to go out and do some of their own homework, and nobody else picked it up.
So would you say that this is something we lost, as, you know, when you and I started in the industry, the bulk of manufacturing was in North America, right? Would you say
Absolutely.
That's something we sort of lost along the way as things moved, manufacturing moved into Asia, that we sort of lost a population of those old stodgy QA managers that would hold your feet to the fire?
You know, that's part of it. The other part of it is it's a lot less costly to take a flight to Ohio and look at a board shop instead of going to China for, you know, a week. So I think that had a lot to do with it too. You can't just, you know, go see somebody tomorrow.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. I hadn't thought of that. So let's talk about, you sent me a list of a few things, and I'm excited to talk about these things. We're gonna geek out and have a board podcast today. So one thing you talked about, a telltale sign, in fact, you're at Prototron. One of my favorite front-end engineers, CAM guys, is Mark Thompson. And I really, because I'm old, really appreciate his talent and the depth of knowledge he has. So talk about really identifying what good engineering, front-end engineering support looks like in a board house.
Absolutely. And Prototron's a great example. Mark is spectacular. I mean, he just published a book on data packages because of the problem getting complete data packages from customers. And he's one of the brightest guys in our industry. And that's the first thing I look at when I go see somebody, is their engineering talent. So what kind of support do they have? Do they have the people in place? Do they have experience? How deep are their engineers? What kind of software tools do they have? That kind of expertise can save you a ton of money, save you from costly delays, and especially with PCBs and how complicated the processes are and the material sets we're using today, they can keep you from avoiding a major cost issue with material selection.
You bet you can, especially on material selection, and that's something that Mark and I've talked about because I spent 6 years or so in the RF and microwave, and just the materials alone, designers and engineers, no fault of their own, tend to over-specify.
Absolutely.
And it's costly, and, you know, we'd like to, you know, people like Mark can help you avoid that over-specifying, or something that may perhaps work now and not later, or a bad stack up, or...
Right. Reliability and latent defects, that's a big issue. You know, being on both sides of the supply chain there, you know, engineering can not only save you money as a customer, but they also save the company they work for a lot of money, because those are the same guys that are putting travelers and work orders into the shop. And if they don't get it right, we're going to throw boards in the trash. So that's probably one of the most important areas in any board shop. You know, designers don't understand how complex the process is. I mean, there can be anywhere from 40 to 80 process steps on a PCB traveler. And they're always amazed that they think you just pull them off the shelf, right? That you don't. It's a custom product, and it's a very complicated process.
I would like to say I talk about this a lot on the podcast, but I think it's more like whining. I always say that the board, you know, a lot of engineers or just people in general. Again, nobody's fault. It's just the state of the busyness of us all and the lack of resources is, it tends to be a line item on a BOM, but right. It's a highly custom product that's very difficult and complex to build. And I always say it's like Rodney Dangerfield, right? The board gets no respect, right? And so I couldn't agree with you more. And I think to your point that that engineer on the front end can save you from yourself accidentally, right?
Absolutely. So, save you from yourself. That's perfect.
Okay. I totally agree with you. I'm high-fiving you. Okay. The next thing that you put on your kind of hot list here is cleanliness inside of a board shop. Now, if you have been inside a board shop, they're not the cleanest looking places. It is a wet process in a, you know, like plating rooms are not the prettiest, sexiest places on earth. So how do you identify cleanliness? What does that look like in a board shop?
Well, yeah, that's a true statement. And yes, it's a board shop, but making printed circuit boards and being clean is not mutually exclusive. It can happen together. And what I look at is, you know, obviously the plate shop, and there's chemicals and there's all kinds of chemical reactions going on with the anode bars and everything else. It can get kind of messy and you know, a bit ugly sometimes. But regular PM and regular, you know, whether you call it 6S or FOD prevention, that goes a long way. And what I look at is...
Wait, define FOD. Knows what FOD is.
I'm sorry, foreign object debris, and it's an aerospace term, but more and more companies are adopting that to keep dirt and debris and stuff from getting in the air, from getting on the product, from being encapsulated under the solder mask. So that all is part of the environment.
Which could be too many cardboard boxes laying around, right?
Oh, dust. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. So what I look at is, are they making an effort to keep it clean? And I see a dirty shop as an indicator of the company culture. I mean, if they're not taking enough care to keep their areas clean and keep the product in areas that are not going to get this debris on them, then that kind of translates over to everything they do in my mind, right? If they're not going to keep their shop clean, I don't have as much confidence in the product quality that they're going to be shipping to me.
That's interesting. That would be like a non-obvious one because...
Right.
Right? So that's
absolutely.
I think that's a good one, actually. Because to your point, FOD and that thing, saying getting encapsulated in the solder mask or stuff touching pads or whatever could affect solderability, right? Or long-term reliability. And it's latent, as you mentioned, right? It's not an obvious thing. So.
It is. It could relate to shorts later on down the road or dendritic growth or all kinds of bad things you don't want to happen.
Tell us what dendritic growth is.
That's contamination on the surface of the board that most times gets encapsulated with solder mask. And it doesn't hurt you in the beginning, but once the board goes under power, it actually galvanizes that contamination and it starts to grow. And it can grow to the point where you can short from one pad or one trace to another. So that's that latent reliability issue that may come after the board's been in the operating environment under temperature and under power.
Yeah, you don't want that to happen when, say, a Navy pilot's flying a plane, right?
Oh, right, yeah.
This would be bad.
Exactly.
So, or any kind of, you know, high reliability application.
Absolutely.
Another thing you marked as something to watch for in a board house is modern equipment set. So tell us about that.
Well, I look at, are they keeping up with technology? I mean, every board shop's got old equipment in some areas, but if the entire shop has got 20-year-old or plus equipment, they're not keeping up with the technology. Their scope's going to be very limited, and it tells me that either there's a reason they're not reinvesting in the company from a equipment standpoint or a CapEx standpoint. That's a flag to me that is something that I would not want to probably engage with. You know, do they have laser drills? If they put in Viafil and planarizers? Do they have LDI and inkjet printing? So I look at, are they keeping up and are they going to be able to support ongoing technology, or if they're content where they are, that's fine. They've got a niche, but they're never going to be anything other than what they are right now.
Well, I imagine that becomes more important as the boards become more complex, say finer features, right?
Yes.
Which seems like it's everything today.
Right? It's always. I mean, it's a continuous, you know, technology moves so fast, it's incredible. And if you don't have these newer pieces of equipment and technology, you know, you can see what's happened to our industry, right? That's why we went from, you know, 2,000 U.S. board shops to less than 200 today, is those guys didn't keep up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, okay, that's a great one. You call something merit badges, which made me laugh a little bit. So talk about what you mean by merit badges. And I don't think you mean Boy Scout merit badges, right?
No, I don't. I'm talking specifically about their any QMS certifications, quality system certifications they have. So a lot of companies now are using that as their first filter, right? So if they're not ISO or they're not AS9100, which is for aerospace, if they're not IATF, which is the automotive version, then a lot of people don't even look at them. They don't even walk in the door for the audit because, you know, ISO, most reputable companies now have ISO, but you'd be surprised how many companies don't.
Really? And
absolutely. Even today, you know, 2019, there's a lot of board shops that don't have ISO.
I had no idea.
I know. It's kind of the price of admission now. It's not a really a differentiator, but you've got to have it to land a new customer. And to me, looking at a company, you know, you're going to do an audit, so you're going to look for yourself. But the biggest thing that that kind of a certification brings is somebody else independently is going into that company once or twice a year and keeping them on their toes, and I don't have to, right? So it's kind of a maintenance of their performance that an independent person or group is doing that gives me assurance that whatever I saw on this one day I was there or this one week I was there, I'm going to see the same thing a month from now or 2 years from now. So,
right.
You know, a lot of companies don't have the resources to go out and audit all their suppliers every year like used to be the norm, right? So they rely on these other certifications to get them past that. It also tells me that the management's made a commitment to quality and product quality, and they're disciplined. And everybody says, you know, well, we're ISO compliant, right? But you're not really. Nobody's coming in and verifying that. You're just telling me you're ISO compliant. So
there's a trick there. Let's talk about that for just a second. People will say, well, we're not ISO certified, but we are ISO compliant, as if that's supposed to make you feel better. But to your point, there's still not that accountability baked in where an ISO auditor from the outside with a completely objective set of eyes is measuring against what you say you're doing.
Right. Exactly.
You know, for our listeners, not everybody may know. Why don't you give our listeners sort of a brief overview of what ISO does? I mean, like, what it is, you know, what it requires, say, from a board shop.
Sure. It's an international standard. All these are international standards that are the same for any industry. So whether it's boards or sheet metal or assembly or whatever it is, it's the same for all of them. And ISO doesn't guarantee that you're going to make good product, but it almost does. I mean, if you do it right, your product's going to improve, your process is going to improve, your costs are going to go down. And it takes every business function in the company from quoting through shipping, and it gives you some guidelines. It makes you, you know, do what you say and say what you do, right? That process. And it has a whole philosophy on how to problem solve, how to have some discipline in your process. So the whole key is consistency, right? So you've got 16 people in customer service. They're all doing customer service the same way. Same with all the operations in the shop. It brings consistency. It brings some discipline. Everybody thinks that it adds a whole bunch of paperwork, but it really doesn't. The newest version actually cuts a lot of that paperwork out. It's more of how do you operate? How do you do your job? And, you know, if you don't have that kind of discipline, it's hard to train people. It's hard to sustain that consistency. And, you know, I'm a firm believer. It works. They all work. And if companies do it to get the benefits out of it, it works fantastic. If they do it just as a sales tool, or like we talked about for wallpaper, just to show customers I got it, and they're not really benefiting from it, it's pretty obvious when you walk through a shop which of those two scenarios that company did.
Well, to your point, I've seen scenarios where, well, a couple things I want to say. So ISO also doesn't dictate the way you do things. It just says you have a process and it's trackable. And if I go check in this file drawer and you say that's where the quotes are, say,
right,
or the travelers are stored here, that they're there.
Right.
And so, like you said, what you say what you do and you do what you say. So it doesn't dictate how you do it. It's just a process control. But here's what I've seen. Let me know if you've seen this. I bet you have. Where a shop, again, for a sales tool, get ISO certified. So they'll scramble around, get ISO certified, and then not really make it part of their culture. And then 6 months later, when the auditor comes around, they'll take a month and they'll scramble again and clean up everything and make it look like they've been complying.
Right. That happens all the time. That's real life. And the first thing I tell my clients is we need to get to a state where a customer could walk in tomorrow unannounced and you would be comfortable with them going through and doing an audit. And that's very typical. Yep, we're going to do a prep for 3 or 4 weeks before the audit. After the auditor's gone, well, back to the old habits, right? So
right.
That's prevalent in every industry, not just PCBs.
Mm-hmm. How do you as a consultant, I mean, it sounds like you speak to your clients to make sure that on any day we can walk in and pass ISO. So how do you encourage them, or what things do you put in place, or, you know, how do you kind of impact the culture?
Well, that's it. It's a culture, right? It's got to start at the top. The people, you know, my general introduction to a company is with the CEO or the president or the GM, whoever is one of the top guys in a company. And we have that discussion up front. And to be honest, you know, as much as I would hate to turn down business, if the top guy says, our customers are pushing us to do this, I don't really believe in it, but I got to do it, that's probably not somebody I'm going to engage with, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's very difficult to change that culture at the top.
Yeah.
Management's got to support it 200% for anybody else to believe and buy into it.
Mm, that makes a lot of sense. It's like dragging somebody along.
Exactly, because you know as soon as I leave, 6 months later, they're going to go back to their old ways and get in some trouble with the ISO guys.
Yeah, interesting. Well, also there's other certifications, like you mentioned AS9100, which is aerospace. What about IPC training?
You know, that's a good point. That's almost expected now with board shops. Customers expect them to have, the most important part of that is to have IPC certified inspectors.
Mm-hmm.
Because those are the people that are guaranteeing the product leaving the facility is meeting all requirements. So most board shops have a certified trainer on staff that trains all their inspectors. The ones that don't, I advise to get that done. It's not expensive, and the benefits are just tremendous. But again, that's not a differentiator anymore. That's an expectation that mm-hmm. I'm going to do business with you. You better have IPC certified inspectors on staff.
Interesting. Well, that makes sense. I mean, we have to build to IPC standards, so
right.
You better know how to inspect to them. You know, I think we have a mutual friend and company, which is Zentech in Baltimore, which is a military CM, which is really focused on reliability. I remember the first time that I walked in there, among other things that impressed me, was this very, very long, long, long hallway.
I know what you're going to say. Yep.
Littered with IPC certifications of all their employees. And not only that, they had invested to the point of having IPC trainers on staff. Like they had some of their people so highly trained that they could train internally, right? So they wouldn't have to send their people out
right.
To be trained. So that hall was so impressive to me. You know, not besides the static control and the statistical process, they had a lot of things that were indicators, but that just walking down that long hallway to me spoke volumes, right?
That's their Hall of Fame.
I love that Hall of Fame.
Yes,
it really impacted me. So when I see like that, where management is putting on display, we're so proud we're doing this. I don't know. To me, that's a good sign.
That's an indicator of, yeah, you're right. That's an indicator of the company. That's an indicator of their culture and also the management support.
Yeah, yeah. Like you said, it's a Hall of Fame. It's a merit badge.
Yes, exactly.
Right, which is why you use that term. I love that. You wrote this term down, but what did you mean by first screening tool?
Well, that's what I meant when companies are looking at a board shop. A lot of times, that's the first thing they'll look at. Do they have ISO? Do they have AS? So they have some certification. If they don't, they go into one certain area, right? If they do, they move to the next stage of looking at them. So that's kind of the first filter. If you don't have it, they're not going to be considered to a lot of companies.
What does it mean to you, Steve, when you walk into a board shop and there are areas of the shop that are completely empty of panels of boards? What does that say to you?
Another red flag, right? So, you know, when you take a tour, which you invariably will, you look at how busy the shop is. If it's busy, people are hustling, there's panels all over the place, that's a good sign. Mm-hmm. If shop is, like you said, very empty, especially in certain areas, there's typically a reason for that, right? So, you know, I say the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. So there's some reason people are not in that shop right now. It could be management, it could be price, it could be the economy, it could be something totally unrelated to the company's performance, but generally there's a good reason why the shop's not busy. Even in down times, there's loyal customers. They do what they need to do to keep the plant busy, to keep people working. And if it's not the case, I don't want to be the guy that comes in as a customer. I wouldn't want to be the guy that comes in as their savior and going to put all my business there when nobody else is. So that's an indicator that something's going on with that company, and I just don't know what it is yet.
Yeah.
The other thing I look at when I take a tour like that is I like to talk to the employees. Mm. You know, supervisors should have all the answers. Managers should have all the answers. I like to talk to the people that are actually doing the job when I'm asking them about how they're doing things and tell me about your job and what are you doing right now. I also take a look at their attitude, right? Are they happy? And it sounds kind of corny, but if the employees aren't happy, again, there's a reason the employees aren't happy. And if they're not happy, they're not going to be giving the best if I'm the customer to my product. You know, like they used to say, don't buy a car that was built on Monday or Friday, right? Don't get a board from unhappy employees because you're not going to be getting what you want. And that's just another red flag and indicator that, you know what, if these guys aren't taking care of their own employees, how are they going to take care of me as a customer?
Well, I think these things you've pointed out are really great because they're not necessarily obvious, right? Like happy employees. But when you say it, it's obvious. But if I were a designer engineer going into audit a shop, like talking to employees or happy employees wouldn't be my first thought. But when you mention it, yeah, if you're not happy and your work is drudgery, you're not going to do your best work.
Right. Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
I mean, none of us do. That's just human nature.
Of course.
Yeah. So these are great. Well, what do you think about IPC has come out with validation services, and you and I both interview for 007 at IPC Apex every year. We try to give back in those interviews and talk to some really neat people. Well, Randy Cherry from Validation Services and someone I've been, I think, interviewing for like 6 years straight.
Okay.
And it sounds like...
I know,
like,
you keep stealing it. I keep wanting to talk to him and you always get him.
Oh, he won't. Sorry. He won't. We are bonded. He is never going to give me up. So what do you think of that program? So that's a program. Well, just tell us a little bit about what you know about Validation Services and do you think it's valuable?
Are you talking about where like shops get validated?
Yeah.
The process. I think it's a fantastic, fantastic program. You know, Randy does a great job and the whole IPC does a great job on that. And that's been something that has really been one of the best things they've brought to our industry in quite a while, outside of the standards. They, you know, coming in, I know a couple of shops, you know, one of them you mentioned, and one of them is, you know, one of their used to be sister companies was the first to get validated from a board shop standpoint. And, mm-hmm. you know, like you said, Zintech from an assembly standpoint, I think it's fantastic. I think it does the company a lot of good because everybody I talk to that's gone through that process tells me it made them better. Customers love it because, again, just like any other merit badge, right, that's something I don't have to worry about. Somebody else has gone in and said, these guys are reliable. They're going to produce consistent quality product, and you don't have to worry about it.
Well, I love that they. I love that the measure is IPC standards. Like, that's kind of an obvious. Like you said, that's a foregone conclusion. We have to, as board shops, have to build IPC standards. So if IPC is measuring how compliant you are to their standards, to me, that's gold.
It is. It is absolutely. It's priceless to
well,
the customer.
Yeah, and like I said, I'm asking you because to me it sounds good on paper, but you're out in the trenches. So to hear that from you, that you think it's good to me means a lot more than if I say it.
It is definitely a differentiator. I mean, we talk about there's not a lot of differentiators anymore. That's one of them that are still out there.
Well, I'm going to make sure, among other things that I share in the show notes, that I'll share, of course, your company's website, and you have written so many great things, and those resources are available on your website. But I will also share with the audience the IPC validation services, where they list I think they call them QMLs, qualified manufacturer listing.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the thing they Randy came up with in the last couple of years is a standard gaps analysis, where they'll go in a shop and not go to certify them, but just to go help them identify, give them that fresh set of eyes to go, you know, you're weak over here. This needs to be tightened up, right?
Yeah.
Because they just, you lose that, you know, we can't be objective about ourselves. So I think that's a good thing. And I think that's something why your service is so valuable, right? And with your rich history, plus you being that fresh set of eyes, right? Steve, we're kind of wrapping up here, but I didn't want to go before mentioning everything you write. But also, we used to have a thing here that I do regular on the On Track podcast that I want to do with you because you're really fun. And it was called Designers After Hours. So tell us. Usually people in our industry usually have a pretty fun hobbies. And this year, iConnect 007 actually made trading cards with people's interests on them. And I cracked up when I saw Steve Williams like on a hog or something. Like what? Here's this super technical genius guy. So tell us about your after hours guilty pleasures.
Well, I'm pretty boring. The two things that my wife and I do are ride our Harleys and travel. And my wife rides her own. I ride one. And it's interesting when people see me when I'm not, you know, at an event or something, and I've got a bunch of tattoos. And, you know, I suppose tattoos are an obsession. But yeah,
which
like
is
to ride
so funny because people, if you know Steve Williams, you have to go look at his website. Super pro, like photography in a suit. Like, he looks like an executive guy. And then to see him with, like, tats and a Harley, it was like, wait, what? Steve who? So
yes.
That was really fun.
And those were both late in life. I got my first tattoo at 45 and got our motorcycles and our training, about 12 years ago. So, I mean, I'm 60, and we just developed those hobbies late.
Well, it sounds like a blast.
It is.
Well, that's very fun. The other thing I wanted to mention before we sign off is I just looked at your website, which I hadn't been on for a while, and there's this book on pre-release called Notorious.
Yes,
what?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Oh, gosh. Hey, thanks for asking. I just sent the email blast out yesterday. It's been about 3 years in the making, and most of that is, you know, I was trying to decide whether I should find a publisher or self-publish. So it's out on my website now. It's at the printer, so probably 2 weeks away from fulfilling orders. And the subtitle is Business Lessons from History's Most Notorious or Ruthless Leaders. So it goes back and it looks at people like Sun Tzu and Attila the Hun and Queen Elizabeth, Sonny Barger, who's the leader of the Hells Angels. Steve Jobs is in there. And I got a lot of questions on why Steve Jobs is in there, but he was quite ruthless. I mean, there was a good Steve and a bad Steve, and the bad Steve's in the book. So each one of those leaders I took, you know, I tell a story about, you know, something that demonstrates their leadership skills, you know, a real story from history. And then I talk about what's the modern business application of what we just saw happen, you know, with you know, Attila the Hun. And then I go through two lessons from each leader and 15 what I call notorious nuggets. Just what can we take away from that lesson and apply in our business lives today? And I'm hoping that it takes off. I think it's a great book. The feedback I've got from the market research says this is fantastic. I can use this information every day. So it's more of it was really fun to write, but my motivation was let's get this information to the people that can use it, and hopefully they'll apply some of the lessons.
Well, you and I share a passion for writing, and in our industry, there's a lot of people that's writing isn't that exciting, but I love your writing style. And
oh, thank
so
you.
I always enjoy reading your stuff, and you always put a fresh twist on things. One of my favorite articles you ever wrote was about Willy Wonka's chocolate factory. What was the title of that? That was so great.
It was regarding lean. It was Willy Wonka was actually, you know, the Wonka factory was actually the first lean factory in the world in history. And that was a lot of fun writing too. And again, a true story. One of my students, when I used to teach, came up and told me and I was teaching a lean class, and they had told me that they had just watched it with their kids. And she said, I was looking at this and saying, this is what we're talking about in class. And I thought, that's interesting.
Funny.
And that just spurred me to do that, right?
Okay, I'm going to dig that gem out because I shared it on all my social media. I loved that article. So I'm sure Notorious. I cannot wait to read it now. Like, I'm ready to go home and curl up with a book right now.
Cool.
So I'm looking forward to it, Steve. So thanks for sharing that with us, and good luck with that.
Thank you.
Well, Steve, it's been great to spend time with you. Our time's up, but I hope you'll come back again and give Mark Thompson a nudge and have him tell him we want him on here pretty soon, and maybe we'll come up and bring a camera and
do
a
right
virtual
here.
Tour, right?
If
designers can't come to factories, let's take a camera to a good factory and show them how it's done.
Fantastic idea.
Okay, let's do that. All right. Well, thank you all for joining the On Track podcast. Please remember to like, subscribe, and comment. When you comment and tell us what you're interested in, we will put it on the podcast. So thanks for joining. We look forward to being with you next time. Until then, remember to always stay on track. We'll be right back.